Then the next case will be 03-2367, Alphonse Murin v. Commissioner of Internal Revenue.
Mr. Royden, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Les Reardon representing Alphonse Murat. Your Honors, let me say at the outset, this case involves a question of first impression, not just in this circuit, but in this nation. In light of that, I would request brief rebuttal time, given the importance of the issue, if it pleases the Court.
I think we can hear your argument. If there's some need for additional time, we'll consider it. But...
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the main issue presented here is whether the conduct of bankruptcy terminated S Corporation status. That, in fact, is the question which hasn't been issued by an appellate court. What happened in this case was...
When you say the conduct of the bankruptcy, what do you mean?
What
that
I mean
it terminates
by,
on the filing of a bankruptcy petition, on the confirmation?
I think that the issue about whether the filing terminated the bankruptcy in Chapter 11 is a subsidiary issue, and I think in many cases
well,
it will.
Yeah, but I'd like to know at what point you say the bankruptcy terminates the subchapter S election.
I believe in this case it terminated at the point in which the trustee was appointed, which was somewhat into the bankruptcy, and in which the trustee began to operate the debtor for the benefit of the creditors. Now, in this case, it comes to a head during a hearing in which Alphonse Murat is denied standing. And it's my view, and I think it's, Your Honor, the record, Mr. Murat represents himself pro se in the tax court, so the record is very difficult to follow. But what happened was is that a tax credit was applied for by the trustee, even though it's a pass-through item, which should have been the property of the shareholder, not of the debtor. To prospectively qualify the buyer for it. The trustee made a decision not to represent the interests of the shareholders in that regard. The shareholder, Mr. Murad, went to oppose the plan, and this court affirmed a ruling that he had no standing to oppose that. He had no equity interest.
But he had the opportunity himself in his personal return to claim the credit.
No, I don't believe he did. I believe
the government has asserted so, and your client made no effort to do so.
My client didn't view. He was told that he was no longer an owner of the corporation, that he had no standing. My client didn't file a tax return. My client didn't believe that he owed any debt. And what has happened here is that the court denied him the ability to seek that credit. Now,
No. How does that follow?
Because he attempted. The credit was applied for the benefit of the creditors.
A credit was applied for going forward, and isn't most of your argument about an earlier period of time?
My belief on the primary argument is that once the trustee started to operate the business, which the tax credit issue is indicative of, or evidence of the fact that he was doing it for the creditors, that it no longer became a small business corporation, and that it terminated based on two principles. One, that you can't have shareholders who are not individuals, and number two, that it was no longer a small business corporation. I believe it's appropriate, and I think the Foreman case points to this, that it terminates on Chapter 11. The Stadler case, is which I'm sure the Court is aware of, indicates that in Chapter 7, in which tax returns over several years are ratified by the shareholders, would not constitute an automatic termination. But at Chapter 11, where you have a trustee appointed, seems to be of a different type of issue. And in this case, I think the facts show that the...
How do you get around that statute, which very clearly says there are three ways of terminating?
Well, Your Honor,
This is tax law, and we're not usually free to invent additions to specified lists which look like exclusive lists.
And the first point of that, Your Honor, is that we argue that one of the points in that list was violated and that this terminated its status as a small business. But there's a couple
other... Is there anything in the bankruptcy code that says that a subchapter S is no longer a small business on the filing of the code?
No, there's nothing expressed either way. So one would have to make a decision that bankruptcy policy would trump this. But look what happened. I mean, look at the basic policy of the case that you're addressing for the first time. The creditors received the property tax-free, and an indigent was burdened with the tax and lost his tax credit, completely lost his tax credit. Now, in regards to follow up on finishing to your question, Your Honor, we believe that it terminated S status. And there's a provision in the code, and I believe it's 1362F, which says there are inadvertent terminations. There are terminations that happen as a matter of course. The shareholders have a right to reverse those terminations. That's why I believe the ratification in Statler is so important. Mr. Murad could have certainly voted or consented to consented status, but there's no indication that that was done, and he certainly would have opposed it. It wouldn't have been into his benefit. The point being, I think, is that ultimately what you're looking for is creating S corporations for benefits to the shareholder, to provide an incentive that the shareholder open the corporation. I think that's what Gitlet says very clearly. Buford says that as well, as does the Durando case. What's being done here is that here, stripped of a tax credit because it goes with the property, and at the same time, the trustee is qualifying it while the S corporation allegedly still exists for the benefit of someone else.
I don't understand your answer to Judge Coffin's question about the way the S status can be terminated, specifically Section 1362D talks about three ways you can do it.
I agree.
And which one does this fall under?
I believe that this terminated small business corporation status, which is one of those three ways, through the fact that beneficial shareholders were not individuals. Clearly, some of the creditors here were corporations. And in addition to that, we believe it terminated its status because the bank...
By filing the bankruptcy, it automatically terminates the small business corporation status?
I believe, Your Honor, that the proper rule here is that when you have a reorganization, and I think this is relatively clear from the Foreman case, that when you have a reorganization, and it's a real reorganization at the outset, that the S corporation status is violated. What Foreman says, where it went from 11 to 7, it says we're going to treat this as an S corporation because the 11 wasn't really intended to reorganize but was to liquidate. And in that case, it said the tax item, the NOL, is clearly not property of the corporation. It's property of the shareholder. And our position is that Mr. Murad was clearly divested of that. I think you get to this point on the main issue. Mr. Gray, as trustee, had an obligation to the shareholders to apply for that credit for the benefit of the shareholders. He chose not to do it. He went to a bankruptcy judge and asked for the judge's blessing. The judge, I think, properly can take away Mr. Murad's shares. But once she does it, it becomes a C corporation.
Let me ask you, when you filed for bankruptcy, did the bankrupt, did he cease to own 100% of the stock?
Well, I think he ceased to own 100% of the stock.
That's a yes or no answer.
It's no at the filing of the bankruptcy. You have to remember, Mr. Murad was running the corporation upon filing. It was taken away from him. But there's no doubt that in the fall of 1998, the court said, you have no equity value. And we know that he must have had some equity value if he was a shareholder because he had a right to a credit. And this court will find itself facing an issue in where this man had no standing to oppose a plan based on no value.
The IRS says that regardless of what happened, he could have filed, as he did every other year, his individual return, taking account of any income and any credits that he received from the subchapter S. Your case depends on the proposition that that's not true, and that based on equitable principles, we ought to read in a new gloss to the small business corporation language of the statute. If you're incorrect on the first proposition, you don't even have an equitable argument.
Judge Lynch, I think, with all due respect, I think you're absolutely wrong.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is...
Am I correct that that's the IRS position?
I believe that's the IRS position, but it's a bizarre position because everyone knows that under the facts of this case, that the property was sold.
The bankruptcy petition excuses person who gets the benefit of the subchapter S election from filing a tax return?
No, I don't believe that's the case.
All right,
he doesn't have to file a tax return if it's no longer a subchapter S. And the fact of the matter is...
Then you've become quite circular.
Well, I don't think it does because I think what you have to, you know, this court affirmed the decision that he had no stock, that he had no equity.
That he had no standing to object to the...
Based on the fact that he had no equity, Your Honor. And we
you equate that to a transfer of ownership?
I have to because we all...
Well, you don't... legally.
Legally, I think we have to under the facts, and this is my point. If he had to have equity... If he was entitled or potentially entitled to a tax credit at the moment this occurred, if he had no equity, if he wasn't entitled to the tax credit, and if it was an S corporation, he was entitled to the tax credit. So that ruling by this court in that case implicitly implied that he wasn't entitled to the tax credit. And we all know that the tax credit was transferred essentially to the buyer, that they qualified for it in the S corporation period simply to be able to transfer it for the benefit of the creditors. I think ultimately what you have to decide is at what point does a bankruptcy do damage on what Congress is trying to accomplish in 1362 D1 and 1361 B. And really the question then becomes one of at what point does a small business corporation cease to act like a small business? Clearly, bankruptcy has a lot of the instances of where that might occur. And I think your ruling that couldn't occur would essentially create a preemption of bankruptcy law over federal tax law. I don't think that's the appropriate argument. In any event, there's no way Mr. Murad could have applied for the tax credit and I mean, as the argument indicates, he never applied for it. Why did he never apply for it? Because the trustee didn't apply for it on his behalf. The trustee applied for it on the behalf of the people who were buying the property. Mr. Murad loses an $11 million tax credit and is saddled with $250,000 in taxes. I don't think it's a matter of equity.
I thought the deficiency here was about $150,000.
Well, I mean, we have state tax issues, I believe, as well, Your Honor.
Aren't I correct? What is this $4 million? We're talking about $150,000, $190,000.
Oh no, the tax credit, which was traded away.
The tax deficiency.
I said approximately $250,000 of tax. I think if you take the federal and state tax, that's a good approximation. In any event, the tax credit was worth a significant amount of money, and it was stripped away from him. So what this court would be then doing is permitting the stripping out of a tax benefit, which court decisions have said are the property of the shareholder. And I think you have to square your decision that says he doesn't have any interest sufficient to be able to argue against this plan and try to reorganize his corporation. I think then you're just reading that ruling as being he doesn't have any value in the corporation, and I would suggest that can't be true if he can potentially apply for $1 million tax credit. So you're permitting the trustee to cause the shareholders to lose the only benefit they have, and then a forced infusion of capital to pay the taxes, and allowing the creditors to receive that benefit. Certainly from a tax collection standpoint, in this case, the beneficial rule for the FISC would be to find that the corporation terminated. To briefly go back to the question regarding the basis, I would also point out that the Farmers Gin case says that there are other ways other than the exclusive provisions listed in 1361B. In that case, that involved a specific provision relating to a change of ownership and the correct tax year. So it's clear that there are other ways to terminate it. In that provision, I think it was implicit that the corporation would terminate if it didn't follow the rules. It wasn't expressed, but certainly that's not the only way. I think that this the policy behind the tax law, as I think said by Justice Thomas and Gillis, which Congress listened to because they went and corrected it, says you've got to look to the benefits behind the policy to S corporations. Justice Byron Gillis said exactly the opposite in his dissent, that you should look to tax collection. I think in this case, tax collection and benefits to the shareholders fall on the side of my client. On the second issue regarding the tax credit, I would submit. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Teresa McLaughlin, and I represent the commissioner. And the commissioner's position is that the tax court was right in deciding that this S corporation status did not terminate either on the filing of the petition or on the appointment of a trustee. The Bankruptcy Code, Section 346C1, provides that the commencement of a case under this title, Title 11, concerning a corporation or a partnership does not affect a change in status of such corporation or partnership for purposes of any federal or state income tax law. The Internal Revenue Code says in Section 1399 that except as provided in Section 1398, a taxpayer's tax status does not change. No separate entity is created by virtue of the filing of a petition in bankruptcy. Section 1398 is not applicable here. It applies only to debtors who are individuals who are in Chapter 7 or Chapter 11. And here, the S corporation is the debtor, not an individual. So we're remitted back to the code's provisions regarding termination of S corporation status, which are highly articulated. And to be an S corporation, you have to be an eligible corporation, and you have to have an election in effect. There's no question that going into bankruptcy, this corporation was an S corporation. It was eligible, and it had an election in effect. Once you have an election in effect, the code expressly provides in Section 1362C that the election is in effect until it is revoked. And there are only three ways in the statute that the election can be revoked. Two of them clearly don't apply. One is where the shareholders revoke it, and that clearly did not happen here. The second inapplicable one involves three consecutive years of gross receipts, 25% of which are passive income, and that clearly is inapplicable. So the only way that the statute provides that this S corporation election can terminate is if the corporation becomes an ineligible corporation. For instance, if it gets more than 75 shareholders, if any shareholder is a non-resident alien. And there's one that escapes me right now, but it doesn't apply. And the one that the taxpayer invoked was that an S corporation loses its status if it has more than one class of stock. So the way we understand the taxpayer's argument is that once the trustee in bankruptcy was appointed, there somehow, that somehow created more than one class of stock. Now, we don't think that that's the case. When the code is talking about more than one class of stock, it's the plain meaning of that is, are there are rights to share in any dividends equal? Are voting rights equal? Are rights to share in any liquidation proceeds liquidation? And that's where an S corporation can run afoul of this requirement. If they create preferred stock, if the classes don't have equal voting rights, that simply doesn't apply here. Now, any theory that the creditors somehow have become stockholders is that doesn't work either. Now, conceivably, there could be a recapitalization at some point in the Chapter 11, but that didn't happen here. And as it happens, the creditors are ahead of the shareholders. So that's
but what about his argument that our prior decision, in effect, said he had no equity, i.e., he no longer had any trace of right in that?
Well, that came up later when, after the bankruptcy, he tried to set aside the plan of confirmation on the basis that his lawyer had an undisclosed conflict of interest. Now, by the time the bankruptcy is over, you know, it's clear when you walk away what happened. But, you know, as it happened during it, I mean, if the corporation buys the lottery ticket, you know, everything could come up roses. And debtors in Chapter 11 sometimes do emerge, you know, with equity interests. So while it may have happened that in the event, at the way things wound up, he wound up with nothing, certainly didn't, you know, during it, you know, before everything happened, he still had a possible, he still had an equity interest even if it was worth nothing. And the creditors didn't because they had a creditor's interest. Now, I also briefly...
Ms. McLaughlin, could we go back a couple of steps?
Sure.
You said that once the election is made, it is in effect until it has been revoked.
Yes.
Is revocation a term of art, which is to say, does the IRS have to accept information from the corporation and the IRS determines that it has been revoked?
Well, if you...
Does there have to be an application to revoke?
No. There doesn't have to be. If you can lose status, even inadvertently, if your corporation becomes ineligible, for instance, if you've got a 76th shareholder, that's once you have an election in effect.
Right.
You can lose your status. And the way the statute works, it calls it, it's either revocation or revoked in section, the terminology is that the election is in effect until it is revoked.
But what is the usual mechanism by which the revocation of a small business corporation status is determined?
Well, the way it's determined, I think the shareholders all have to, the corporation has to elect, and this is addressed in section 1361, the corporation has to elect, the shareholders have to consent. And I believe there is a form for that.
The corporation has to elect to no longer be a subchapter S.
Oh, no.
No.
Initially.
Let's start here with they have elected to be a sub S.
Yes.
How does one get out of being a sub S in the normal course of things?
In the normal course, where you're not losing your election by having too many shareholders or something like that, you would revoke the election, and that's in section 1362D1. And the statute itself doesn't say much, Your Honor.
But usually the taxpayer takes an attaxive step to revoke the election?
Yes, and termination 1 by revocation. A, in general, an election under subsection A may be terminated by revocation. B, more than one half of shares must consent to the revocation.
Okay.
So then I would also like to touch upon the low-income housing credit. And basically, I wanted to clear up the fact that what happened here is that the trustee, on behalf of the estate, sold the estate's main assets, which was a low-income housing complex in the Mandela Apartments. And the buyers of the complex applied to get an allocation of housing credits. And they obtained credits, an allocation from the state or local housing authority for the next taxable year, 1998. So it was not the taxpayer who ever applied. And this is a threshold requirement. If you know, there would be questions on the merits whether the credit would be allowable to V&M Corporation, the taxpayer, because, but, you know, I won't get into that, but there would be questions. But it is clear that V&M never applied for an allocation of credits, which is a prerequisite to the allowance, because there are only a certain number of credits allowed for each state.
You have to apply first to the state and get an allocation from the state before you can apply for the federal tax credit.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And nobody for the tax year 97 ever applied to the state a necessary prerequisite.
Right, and the application was granted for the year 1998 for the buyer of the complex, and this is when the taxpayer, S&M Corporation, didn't own the complex anymore.
Right, so there's a mismatch in time. But the argument he's making is he used to control the corporation. Had he still controlled it, he could have applied for a tax credit. He lost control. The trustee comes in. The trustee does not apply the trust of the tax credit for the year 97, and that leaves him in a difficult position.
Right. But just as an aside, the low-income housing credit came in 1986 for property placed in service after 1986.
Did V&M ever apply?
Not to my knowledge. It's not in the record, but there would but they placed it in service in 1981. So I don't think they were eligible for it anyway. I don't think V&M was eligible for it anyway. And you have to buy it, you have to substantially rehab it.
Why was it not eligible earlier, but when the sale is made, it's eligible?
Well, a new buyer who buys it and places it in service is eligible.
Okay, because it's a new buyer.
Right. And you can only turn over the credit is very complex, but you can't turn it over more than every 10 years and get a credit. That's one of the provisions. So, and we think it's not unfair for this income to be passed back, even aside from everything. A point of fairness has been raised, but the taxpayer enjoyed single-level taxation. There was no double tax here. He got the benefit of the depreciation of this apartment complex. And so...
What does that mean? You said he got the benefit of a lower depreciation.
He got the benefit on his... This is the way subchapter S works, and it's perfectly legitimate, but he was able to write off the depreciation of these buildings on his personal income tax returns. And so now that it's sold and the depreciation is recaptured, and that was a big part of the gain here, it's really not unfair for the shareholder also to be charged with the income. And in fact, there would be a question whether the corporation should be stuck with that tax to the detriment of the creditors. So unless the court has any other questions...
The tax liability only goes up to the point of the sale, which occurs in late 97, I think.
Yes, well, it's the whole year 1997, and that's and basically I think that there may be other items of income, conceivably such as rent, I suppose. But once the property sold, I don't think there would be...
Any further income.
Okay. Odds and ends.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I can make you're going to get a very brief.
It's going to be very brief. The statement by the IRS as to what happened here is incorrect. What happened is V&M had to apply for the credit because the buyer couldn't qualify. The application for the credit was made while Mr. Murad was allegedly that. I can submit a reply brief. The buyer could not have qualified the credit unless they held the property for 10 years, unless it was transferred by a qualified buyer. There is no doubt.
We'll look at the record.
All right. Thank you.